Dude, it's good seeing you, man.
Oh, you too. What's happening?
How's your day? How's your day been? What do you what'd you do today, man?
Today is it's kind of a rainy day, so no golfing. Usually it's my golf day on a Thursday.
Oh.
What did I do today?
That's cool you play golf, by the way. Like, I want to play golf. I have friends that play golf.
Yeah. And,
like, where do you start? Like, when did you start playing golf, man?
My dad had me, and like, I would ride around in the cart when he'd do some tournaments for his work and stuff. And he was a casual golfer, and I would hit a couple things, but you know, I was not good enough. And so I would take some lessons probably at maybe 10 years old. And by the time I was a teenager, I was more into it and just kind of caught the bug. Because it catches you. Like, if you're kind of casual and you get it, but if you go out and play a couple of times and you're like starting to figure more shit out, and it's one of the most humbling and frustrating things, how things can change so fast. You know, there's a thing called, we call it the PBFU. It's the post birdie fuck up, because usually you'll get a birdie on a hole and you're feeling good. And then, you know, 8 times out of 10, the next hole, you'll just duff one off the tee, or you'll triple bogey or something like that. It's golf is the most mind fuckingest, whatever the adjective is, thing that I've ever been involved with.
Do you ever have like business deals or decisions, big decisions you have to make while you're playing golf?
There's guys that I play with that are like real estate agents, and
yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah,
from a brightness down a little bit.
So. I was watching The Sopranos. That's what made me think of that. Where
they
come up with these big decisions while playing golf.
Yeah, there's guys that I play with that they're on call, so they're making calls and they're making deals. But for me, it's been mostly because me and the wife own the bar. That if she's out of town or she's not available, that I, you know, nothing much happens at the bar that's a huge emergency. But sometimes that would be anything that I'm, you know, doing at the bar. Otherwise, my days are, I'm kind of living my best life right now. You know, it's like the bar kind of runs itself. And so it's, I take the kids to school, then I've got my, you know, I got my 6-7 hours to do what I want. And it's usually on the golf course or learning and playing here in the studio and recording stuff or learning songs for somebody, you know, fucking whatever.
Well, Phil, man, it's so cool that you're back on the show. I know the first time you were here, you were at my house, which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I knew you had a flight. Yeah, you had a flight to catch. And I remember, like, my buddy Ryan, we talked about this today. I think he drove you to the airport. Trying to catch. Oh, you missed it.
I missed it.
What happened? Did you catch the next one? When was the next one?
I was just late, and then I just had to wait. And I was it was funny. I was I missed the flight, and I ran from, because there was a big line trying to get out, and I got out and I ran in there, and they're like, "No, you're not gonna make it." And it was just like an hour and a half or something. It wasn't a big deal, but I just saw that Chris Jericho was just like, I'm in it, you know, something. He might be in Atlanta. He's doing like a secret wrestling thing. And, you know, I saw that he had, you know, I hit him up where he's at. He's all, "I'm just landing in Atlanta." So he was coming out just as I was coming in. So I was able to hang with him for like 20 or minutes or so and chat him.
Oh, up. That's cool, man.
Yeah. It was a cool little chance meeting of, you know, Chris is a good dude, man. He's one of the most hardworking and productive, prolific entertainers that I've ever seen. You know, the guy's always, he's everywhere and always just, you know, on point, doing his thing. I love Chris Jericho, man. I admire that man.
That's awesome. I was interviewing Rich Ward a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about Jericho, and he was just saying that as soon as they got done with the Jericho cruise, he was flying out to do another thing. Like, there's just no downtime. I mean, he's a workaholic.
He's on the go, man. He's hustling. He's making it fucking happen. And he treats people well. And he's, you know, he's a good dude. And, you know, I admire so many of his traits from a businessman, and also just the way that he interacts with the people that he's you know, just, I'm just a peer of his, you know. I mean, we did do a, we did a song together. It was top 20 on the radio, which was awesome. But
what was the song?
It was a cover we did of Aces High by Iron Maiden, but it took off, man. It was awesome. Nita Strauss, her dude, Josh Vallalta, I think. It's not Vallalta. I know he might be Mexican, but, you know, Vallalta. And who else played guitar? It was me and Nita, of course. Fucking ripping. And who played bass? Oh, Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah, look it up, man. It's a fun video.
I'm going to look it up, man. I'm going to add the link to it.
Video, so everybody was like in their house and doing their thing. And Johnny was funny. I'll spoil a little bit of it, but he's just throughout the whole video, he's just walking through his house, huge fucking place. And he's just taking a shot, drinking a beer. I'm on the elliptical playing, you know, and then he's fucking doing another shot, goes out to the pool, throws the bass down and jumps in the pool right at the end of it. Pretty fucking good.
Oh man, that's so good. And you remind me of Jericho because you're both workaholics. I feel like you're always got something going, you know?
Oh man, you know, yeah, I do, man. I do. And every time I think I'm going to give myself a break or, I've got this, I don't know what kind of happened. I've got this incredible fear of missing out on stuff, you know? So if there's a hole to fill, you know, figuratively, then I want to be productive in that time, whether it's being at home with my, you know, my friends and the cover bands that we do here or I've got this thing, this band kicking off with Carrie, you know, and that's going to be, the main gig. So, you know, that will be the biggest piece of the puzzle, you know, and all the other pieces will have to fall in. So I've been just kind of biding my time for close to 5 years now for this thing to happen. And so, now, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. You said 5 years. Has this thing been going on for 5 years, this planning?
About four and a half, I want to say. I think it was like August of 19 is when he he told me that, look, I want you to be a part of this next thing that I'm doing. So it's been four and a half years of holding the secret and, wow, you know, waiting for it to come to be.
Were you like the first one? Is Kerry King reaching out to you, Phil Demo, and saying, like, I'm going to start a project? You know, I want to do my own thing and I need you,
No, I don't think so. I think that his original thought was Gary Holt. That, I mean, when I first, like, I didn't pitch him as me as available because I was still a Machine Head at the time. And I think this was in 18. They had come and played through San Jose. It was the last night of their tour. I think Testament was on Napalm, maybe. I forget. But I had asked Kerry, what he was doing next. Like, hey, what do you got going on next? And of the mind that, you know, hey, we're, you know, Tom's going away, but he just wanted to kind of continue with Paul and Gary. And for whatever reason, I think that, you know, Gary's got Exodus and that's his baby. And that's his baby. He writes the music and that's the thing he was going to do. So I don't know how much of the, you know, Gary has written all the music for this. And I don't know how much of a collab it would have been with Gary. Shit, I don't know. I can't even begin to understand why, but it didn't happen with Gary, obviously, for whatever reason. And I think that I was, the next for that spot. I'm kind of, you know, the guy that Slayer would call if that spot would need to be filled. And so I think that was just in Kerry's mind that, you know, he knew that I wanted to be it. And I probably told him that after. Yeah, it was, this is what happened. So this saved, you know, spring of 18, I'd tell Kerry, hey, what are you doing? I just ask him. And then September rolls around. I announce that, hey, I'm quitting Machine Head, you know, and I'll still do the tour in November or whatever. But, you know, hey, I'm quitting. So that day I get a text from Kerry saying, That's why you wanted to know what I was doing next. You know, like, oh, you're available type deal. So maybe that at that point, it kind of put in his, you know, in his head that whatever, you know, I had, and maybe that made shit, I'm putting all the pieces together now, because later that year, a couple months later, is when I got the call to come play with Slayer. So
yes. Oh yeah, man. That was a lot of stress, right? Yeah. So for this project, you're saying that Kerry already had all these guitar riffs. I know some were left over from Slayer's Repentless, right? I mean, Idle Hands.
Yeah. I don't know if Idle Hands was a leftover.
Okay.
I don't think it was. I don't think it was. It might have been, but in just my dealings, I think that there's a song on the record. I don't know how much I should be sharing. I know there's one song for sure. It's the title track. I think that was left over from Repentless.
Hell I Rise? Is that the...
Yeah. So I think that there might have been one other one, but I don't think Idle Hands was. It was the first song I heard, and it was the first song that I wrote a solo for. So the solo that... and that song was the first one that I wrote here in the studio, so it's kind of cool to hear that being the first one released. And I'm going to be name dropping here a little bit, but I was going back and forth a little bit with Kirk Hammett today. And I told him that, because he had told Mark Osegueda, hey, the solo's awesome. It's the solo of the year or whatever, you know, and so I thanked him. I said, hey, I heard that you dug the solo on the song, and he's like, oh my God, I thought that was Kerry. I didn't know, you know, he didn't put it together, and I missed his call, but he left me this awesome fucking voicemail, dude, saying like, it's the best solo of the year so far, you know, and all these just glowing things that Kirk Hammett is telling me, you know, it's like, you know, one of our heroes, and to hear him glow about, you know, the solo, it's one of my least favorite solos on the record, actually. So it's, you know, but to hear him say that it was really personal, and it's, you know, I want to bring that to this band. I want to bring that sense of, I don't know if it's melody or, you know, I hate the word controlled chaos, you know, but, you know, some sort of lineage between the music and the solo sections that kind of make them, you know, those solo sections in Slayer and in Kerry's music before are really frenetic. You know, even what Gary was doing was, it matched all that brutality, and they were, you know, I think that my solos are less brutal in nature, and had to check with him. It was a long sentence, you know, just going here.
No, I love it. That's amazing. Yeah.
So I had to tell Kerry, you know, or ask him or broach it with him that, you know, this is what I'm doing. You know, I tracked my leads here first. And played them, you know, 50 times to where I'm just playing them single pass and playing them best as I can, and sent them away, and was like, hey, this is me. This is what I am going to do here. If it's, you know, of course, if it's okay with him, because it's his trip. And is that okay? And he said, yeah, I love it. You know, he's all in true Kerry fashion. I don't hate it, so it must, you know.
Is that right? Yeah, I don't hate it, so it's good.
I don't hate it, so, you know. So that was, you know, a compliment to me getting that out of Kerry King.
Dude, that is amazing compliment. And for Kirk, I was thinking about when Metallica did the Black Album, and they filmed it all, and they showed Kirk trying to nail that solo, and he had Bob Rock over him, you know? They just kept going over and over again. Do you have someone, when you come up with these solos, are you by yourself? I mean, do you have someone, like, do you have someone you can reach out to be like, what do you think of this? Or is this all Phil Dimmel and you just come up with it and turn it in?
For this and for, like, the BPMD stuff and the violent stuff and everything post Machine Head that I've recorded, it's been just kind of me. You know, and I'll come up with something and then I'll send it out, and it's always been, fuck, that's awesome. You know, that's fucking killer. You know, maybe, was there anything on the BPMD record? No, I think that everybody's been, it's just me here kind of just dissecting them and building them. And I'll, you know, I've gotten, I'm pretty entry level with the Pro Tools, but I know how to layer some stuff and make some playlists and piece some stuff together so I can have a structure. But I, one thing that's different than when I was soloing a Machine Head, because me and Rob would, we would be there with each other, and like, yeah, I would be there when he's tracking his leads and offer him some, hey, try that wah thing you do, or, and he would throw ideas at me, and hey, why don't you do, you know, Rob was really good at like making them, making my solos, or suggesting, because at the end of the day it's my decision, but suggesting things, you know, hey, you do that a lot, you know, you start with, you know, he was always like, you always start your solos off with that double bend, you know, it's just like, let's try to stay away from that. So he always had some really good advice on, you know, try this,
Yeah.
and I, you've got this in your arsenal. So let's remember when you got this, and you know, I would do that with him as well. Or so, but
When
since then, I haven't had that, you know, and
I like that though, right? That's nice. So you don't have somebody over you, right?
yeah,
You like
no. And I
that.
didn't feel like Rob was over me going, ah,
Yeah.
blah, blah. Well, it was more of a like a creating thing. So I don't think that he was overbearing on me with my solos in any sense, but it was just different in the fact that a lot of them, I guess maybe I didn't put as much time into preparing, or I didn't have the convenience of my fucking studio here, you know, and to be able to, nope, click, you know, nope, do it again, do it again. And the technology is more now to where the Machine Head solos, I would be piecing together and cutting out, oh, let's catch those two notes, or let's try to get this bend better. And now I'm, you know, one passing through my leads and maybe catching a note, or for the most part, it's all transitionary feel and organic in that sense. And that's what I want. So, yeah, there you go.
So the band is wild because I probably told you this before, but Kyle Sanders lives right down the road from me. So, and
Yeah, I remember the last time. Let me get my mail off.
oh no, you're fine.
I remember the last time I was there. I spoke to him, and I was like, "Hey, man,
Yeah.
I was in your neck of the woods." He's like, "Yeah, he's got the School of Rock and the thing going." And
And Blackstrap, yeah, I'm representing Blackstrap. He's got his rock club.
yeah, oh, now the club, yeah, but he didn't
Yeah.
have it then, right? That's
He
awesome.
didn't have it then, now it's new, but he's an entrepreneur like you, man. So
He
he, you
is.
know,
He's got
you
a
guys
new.
get stuff done.
Kid like me too, I think.
Oh yeah, he does.
I think his name's Wolf too.
Yeah.
We have a wolf. A 7-year-old is Wolf here. It's kind of crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
That
But
is crazy, man.
we had a quarantine baby. We have Magnus is 2.5 now.
So how many total do you have now?
Oh man, this is a whole different episode. It's good, you
All
know.
right, well, you don't have
I
to answer if you don't want to,
Oh,
man.
no. I'll give you the brief. I have four kids. I have a 2-year-old Magnus. I have a 7-year-old Wolf. I have a 17-year-old Jaden, and then I have a 36. I think she's born in 87. Do the math. So she'll be 37 this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, a daughter, and she has four kids. So I have four grandkids, and I think they're from maybe 13-ish down to maybe three.
That's
So
a lot of birthdays, man.
my 2-year-old is an uncle to four kids.
What do they call you? Are you Papa or Grandpa or like what's the name?
No, because I don't see him that often.
Okay.
I, you know, like I said, a whole other episode, but I didn't, you
Yeah.
know, I didn't know about my daughter until 2013. So it was there was some adjusting to get to, you know, because she's 3 years younger than my wife. And so we didn't I'm kind of like the I'm like a cousin or an uncle or something. There's no paternal vibe between me and Elise, who's an amazing human, and you know, she's part of our family. You know, we just kind of like it took there was just this, you know, you can imagine how awkward it was for everybody at the time, and we got it together. And you know, they live in Hawaii for a bit, and now I think they're out in the Midwest, so we don't see them that often. But I think they call me Phil Bill or something like that. And you know, they I'm not like a grandpa, or, you know, I'm just, I think I'm Phil Bill.
Yeah. Well, I have some young kids. I have a almost 11-year-old and a 12-year-old. Uh-huh. And so your son, Wolf, how old is Wolf now?
Wolf is 7.
7. Yeah. That's such a cool age, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I have different adjectives.
Okay. Yeah. Challenging. Yeah. Does he have an iPad or any kind of electronics?
He does. He's got an iPad and he's super into Minecraft. So he's into building and, like, you know, if we'll go to, there's a place out here called the Great Wolf Lodge. And they're a chain, but it's like an indoor water park. And they're, so he'll build it like, oh yeah, this is the one. And he'll build like all the slides and, you know, everything from the outside. And it's,
that's so cool.
He's a character. Yeah. The older that he becomes, the more he's open to being taught things.
I know we're all over the place, man, but it's so good catching back up to you. One more question though, with, the bar, you mentioned the bar again, Eddie's.
Evie's.
It's still called Eddie's, right?
It was Evie's with a V. That was, that was, wow. So you got me right after, when was I there last? It must have
you
been.
You were before the pandemic, I think. It was probably 2019, maybe, or 18.
So we had changed the name. Evie's was the name of the previous owner, and it was her place. And then, so we kept it that for a year. And then we changed it to the back lounge for the past 5 years or so. So Marta named it. It's, you know, if you've been on a tour bus, so you know what happens in the back lounge. And, you know, it's where we don't talk about what happens in the front. You know? It's just kind of like the back lounge. That's the, you know, the safe place to go.
Yeah, that's great that it's still going around, though. I mean, that's amazing. And
yeah,
Marta,
yeah.
Too. Yeah. So she works there, right?
We're down there once a day for a little bit, you know, sometimes not at all, because it's under 100 cap. So it's a small sports kind of rock bar. It's mostly just a dive bar, a clean dive bar. And so the bartenders kind of manage it themselves. We order, we just go, and we've got the cameras. We're making sure that everything's legit. And it's doing its thing, man. We've been really fortunate to have a thriving business and all the craziness that's been happening. You know, the quarantine was weird, and we were able to, you know, muscle through that and get through what we needed to. And through some pretty creative financing, you know, it's almost better that we went through it. You know, we came out on the other end of it almost in better shape. So it sucks for so many people that weren't able to survive the shutdown and all of that. So we feel real fortunate, and we feel pretty obligated to, you know, take care of our community here. And it's pretty cool to see the town we live in, Dublin, California, we circle the wagons. You know, something happens with one of our own, where there's always my cover band called the Merkins gets together.
Merkins, yeah.
We do some fundraising and stuff, and it's a good place to live, man. I'm really proud of our town here.
I was thinking, like, the Merkins. Am I saying that right? The Merkins.
The Merkins, yeah.
They should open for Kerry King. Your band, yeah.
Man.
Kerry King featuring the Merkins, you know.
No, not at all. I mean, we cover like fucking Bon Jovi and Journey. And
Do you sing? Are you singing this song?
Songs. There's a couple songs that I'll sing and play. I'll leave it to, because the band's made up of all my high school buddies. But then I'll wrangle in, you know, Chuck Billy and Eric from Testament came out the last one. We had Brad Gillis come out. And Dean from Journey came out to the last one, and the Rancid guys will get up with us. Wayne from Hatebreed gets up with us, and Gretchen from Zeparella. I don't know if you know who she is. Gretchen Mant, just an amazing guitar player from the area. So it's all just this huge silly jam. Everybody singing, you know, someday love will find, you know, and it's just live karaoke, man. And it's all our friends, no egos, no head trips. There's four guitar rigs on stage. The last show we had over 60 people play over 50 something songs. It's the most fun I've ever had.
That sounds like the most fun. Have you ever thought about, you guys like film this and make a thing out of it, you know, release it?
Yeah, we did film the last one, but it's all about being there. You know, it's all about the filming. It doesn't really capture, you know, just the insanity of, you know, because for the most part, these aren't professional musicians. These are, you know,
my buddies. Yeah.
My kid. It's my kid. My 17-year-old gets up and jams Metallica with us, and he's good. And we carry the tune and it sounds, but we're, you know, for the most part, not professional musicians. And it's picking silly songs or not so silly songs sometimes. You know, we play some Thin Lizzy that's kind of weird. We play Tooth and Nail by Dokken, and you know, I got some talented friends, man.
Yeah, man. And I'm kind of all over the place, but kind of want to go back to this Kerry King project. When you guys all got together, did you guys all get together? Was this files being sent? I mean, did you guys get in a room and, you know, everybody like Mark, everybody just get in one room and jam?
No. I mean, Kerry and Paul get together and they wrote the material.
Slayer and Paul.
And Kerry has a spot where he's got an engineer who record the jams and kind of put stuff together. And then they'll demo it. Kerry sings on the demos and before there was a vocalist. So I'm hearing, you know, Kerry sing on these demos and it's really cool to me. You know, I didn't even know he sang. So
yeah, how was that?
Hearing him on the demos is so fucking cool, man. It's like, you know, kind of not really a punk rock voice, but kind of that, you know. And there might have been a minute when he was considering maybe singing it because the vocal search was at a point where,
you know. Oh, yeah. He's going to do Phil Collins, man. Like Phil Collins took over and just started singing, you know.
But it's they demo the stuff, sent it out. I know that Kyle got files and I think he just wrote his own bass parts and sent them back, and which Kerry was stoked about. And he said, because that's, you know, that hadn't happened before. And then he sent me files and said, here's your sections for soloing and stuff. And granted, this has been, it's been a super slow roll. You know, it's been from him, even because everything shut down after Slayer played their last show. So they were shut down for a bit. Him and Paul didn't even get together for a long time. So then the material is getting written. He's sending me, you know, it's been a real spoon-fed operation for me. So getting the files, I'm sending him back stuff that I'm digging. So it's a slow roll. Mark gets in. They're recording the record, I think, like maybe February, March of last year, maybe April. And I go down to track my leads. And everybody's there because we're doing a photo shoot because we haven't been together yet, you know.
Oh, cool.
Kyle comes in. I think it's the first time that he might have seen everybody. So it's the first time we were in a room together was the day that I tracked my leads. So we took some photos that day and then hadn't seen each other again, you know, that was April, you know. So then we –
it's all a big secret. Nobody knows this,
right? Yeah. I mean, we got back together and did some photos for the album in maybe January. And there you go. So we have yet to practice. Me and Paul and Mark, we're going to jam this weekend. But Paul lives up north and he gets some bad weather. So I think that there's a big, big weather front coming in. So he had to stay home. So there will be a point probably with me, Paul, and Mark, because we're West Coast. We'll get together because I wanted to flesh out and I want to play with Paul with these songs, and because I just learned them. I didn't, you know, I played the solos. I know my solos, but I didn't learn the songs because in the interim of all this happening, you know, I'm playing with Lamb of God. I'm playing with, you know, Overkill. I'm playing with Testament. I'm playing, you know, with Violence. I'm, you know, playing with Metal Allegiance. And so there's a lot of other stuff that I've been doing.
That's amazing. Like, how does your brain just like switch from all these different projects and you just memorize everything? I mean, you're going full throttle. I mean, do you ever have just a brain fart where you're like, I just don't remember this one?
Not while I'm in it. Not while I'm in it. Like, my son's a big metalhead, and he was listening to one of the newer Lamb of God songs that I learned, and I couldn't remember it. I know kind of where it's at, but I don't got it. I've like, the hard drive has to like flush stuff out to bring more stuff in, and it just kind of goes away. But there was a point in, I think it was 21, when everything was opening back up, that I was in Lamb of God's bullpen just in case somebody got sick, because that's when everything was at the height of, everybody's testing every day and everybody's wearing masks and everybody's bubbled up, and the first leg of that Megadeth tour where they're all just be ready, something happens. I was going to play Bloodstock that year with Violence. And so me and Devin Townsend had met, and we talked, you know, and he was using local people, so he didn't have to, you know, have people travel. And I was going to be at Bloodstock. He's like, why don't you play guitar for me at his headlining Bloodstock set? So I learned his set. I had his set. Here's, you know, Lamb of God set, ready to go. Yeah. Both sides, because I had to learn Willie and Mark's side. So I'm learning both sides of Lamb of God stuff. So I'm doing the Devin set. And it's a different, you know, his open tunings, and it's pretty ambient. So it's not as frenetic as the Lamb of God stuff. So it's more space to everything and totally separate, you know. So then Overkill calls me. And so there's this Overkill one-off show that they want me to do. So I'm learning Overkill stuff. So I've got an Overkill set to do. Testament calls me. There is a one-off Testament corporate gig that Alex can't make. It's like this NFL thing. It's for the Raiders. So a big Raider fan. So it's just kind of a possibility that it might happen. They're up for it. Can you learn our songs and be ready? Yes, I'll fucking learn your set and I'll be ready for that. Metal Allegiance has a one-off in Long Island. So there's another 20 songs of Metal Allegiance that I have on another set that's happening over here. Something else. There was something else. Oh, the Merkins are playing. So I've got, you know, a 40-song Merkin set that I'm learning for a Merkin show.
Oh, it gives me anxiety thinking about this.
I think there's another one. I know there's another one. I don't remember what it is. So I have these in my studio here. I have these legal pads with all the songs on them. And I'm at one point, there's 176 songs that I was learning, you know, for let me see what else there was. I knew there was something else. Testament, Merkin, Solo Few, DT Bloodstock, Merkins, Testament. Was Hail? Oh, it was Hail.
Oh, yeah, man.
It was Hail that I did with Lomenzo and Zett and Chris Adler. You know, so there's 22 cover songs that I've listened to. So 176 songs that I would play through, that I had, you know, but ask me to get through one Devin song right now and it would be a struggle.
Okay, yeah, so you had to go back.
I don't retain, but it would come to me.
Like, who can retain all that anyway, in general, like that much?
I had it at the point. At that point.
Yeah, at that point.
But it's and because we were, you know, everything had been locked down, so I'm just playing guitar and doing these collabo jams and, you know, writing Violent stuff. So
there
Kerry
you
go. King, Frosty just talked about it.
That's amazing. You're like the David Goggins. Like, I've been David Goggins. I'm thinking I'm saying his last name. He runs a lot and does all this crazy stuff. You're like David Goggins for like metal. you're like the marathon of music.
Right. And then there was a couple other gigs that I don't want to just like, if it didn't happen, I don't want to go, this band called me, because I don't, you know, you don't know the inner workings anymore. But there was another couple pretty big bands that were, hey, be ready, because this could happen type deal.
When you say like, hey, be ready for this kind of band, when Kerry King, are you guys going to go on tour? I mean, do you have to set a you know, keep your schedule open for that? Are you guys doing some shows live or anything scheduled?
So with Kerry, it's my priority. So he has the right of first refusal with me. You know, it's just like, this is what we're doing. And so in May, we're doing a couple of the Wimmer festivals. We're doing Welcome to Rockville, and we're doing Sonic Temple in May. And then we go June, we're going to Europe and doing the Rock 'Em Rings and doing all the big festivals overseas. And then a couple weeks after we get back in the end of July, we're going out with Lamb of God, Mastodon, and Malevolence in the States and doing the States.
Oh, okay. That's great. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys play live. That's really awesome, man.
Yeah, man. It's exciting. I'm looking forward to jamming with all these guys at some point.
Yes. I'm so glad, like, it seems like life's getting back to normal now without the pandemic, without wearing a mask and everything. I mean, did you like when all that was going on and you can't tour, that really, did you hate that? Or were you just glad that you can relax? Because now it seems like everything's full throttle.
No, I didn't. I didn't like it. I didn't like, you know, the lockdown. And I mean, it was about this time. Well, it was close to this time when it all happened. Cause
yeah, March. Like, yeah.
It was right before our biggest weekend at the bar. I live in Dublin, California. So St. Paddy's Day is a big deal in this town. And it was our biggest weekend of the year. And, you know, we're getting wind of, oh, you know, shelter in place gets uttered for the first time. And, you know, and for me hearing it, and we're like, what the fuck is going on? You know, they're shutting us down. And I don't want to get into the ins and outs of the politics and all of that. I, as a business owner, had a problem with when they were reopening everything, that, you know, I get everybody has to be outside. I get the idea of that, but everybody was just under a tent outside. They were still inside. And they, in California, they made us charge people a meal to buy a drink. So they just couldn't come and buy a drink. They had to buy a legitimate meal, not chips, not, you know, pretzels, but they had to buy a cheeseburger and fries or a, you know, blah, blah. So we had to bring a caterer in. So it's like paying cover. Hey, you know, pay your $10 and, you know, buy a meal and then you can drink. So that's, as a business owner, that was our struggle. And
yeah, know, such crazy rules.
It was weird.
So, you guys have the album finished, right? It's complete. When does the album come out for Kerry King?
Comes out May 17th, 15th. Yeah, one of those, whatever the Friday is.
Is it weird that like Slayer is going to play these shows and announced it pretty soon after you guys announced your gig with Kerry?
Yeah, you know, it's the 17th, May 17th.
May 17th, yeah.
Yeah, it caught me off guard. I didn't know anything about it. So it was to have a Slayer gig announced before we've even played a show was really weird to me. And you know, Slayer's none of my business. The whys and the wins, it's none of my business. I had questions when I first heard, you know, and they were answered. And I'm 100% at peace and good with everything that's happening.
Now it's so funny, like when bands say they're done. Eddie Trunk was talking about it. Are they really done? You know, Motley Crue had a contract or something, like they're gonna sue themselves, you know, but then they blew the contract up.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's hard because I know that they're in a spot to where it's just like, and I don't know the personality part of it with any band for that matter, for them to, that has to be in a pretty low to go, we're done, to, you know, to say that in the first place. But it just, you know, it just felt like it was. It just felt like it was done with Motley Crue and Kiss, you know, and Ozzy, no more tours I saw in 1991, you know, so it's like, yeah. You know, even still, I know he's saying he's not come out and Kiss still, you know, it's, I'm not fool me once.
Oh, so do you think Kiss will eventually come back? Or are you sold that they're done, that they played their final show? Yeah.
No, I think they'll play again.
Yeah. Okay. So they'll probably, there's loopholes, right? Residencies or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I think the most shocking one for me is Pantera. I mean, what do you think about Pantera coming back You know, I think it's pretty cool. Like the crowds, they're, you know.
I think it's cool. I think it's cool. And the way I haven't seen it yet. They haven't played where I've been. So I haven't seen it yet. I think, you know, I hear a lot of bagging on Zach and, you know, it's like nobody wants to see anybody else play that. They would bag on anybody that was up there doing it. You know, I think that Zach he's the torchbearer for this generation, for my generation, I feel, you know, that he's the guitar god and he's the dude that's, you know, will speak up and he's the one that I look up to in a sense of, you know, I talked to Zach a lot and for stuff in my career and he's always been, you know, he's a whole 2 months older than I am, but you know, I feel like he's like my big bro. And to see, I don't want to see anybody else doing that. You know, I know there's guys that could nail that shit. You know, he's being Zach and that's what I want to see him do. You know, Charlie's fucking awesome. It's good to, I think the people need to hear the songs and pay tribute in that sense. And I hope they're doing, you know, paying tribute. It's for the brothers. So I hope it's, you know, they're doing a lot of the, you know, tribute to them and having them be present. So I think that, you know, there are guys that can play the stuff, you know, Ola England is fucking, he nails the dime stuff. Wes Hauk, fucking amazing. You know, Reese Scruggs, who's from Havoc and jamming in Machine Head, you know, those guys could play it and they might, you know, they might play it closer than what Zach does, but you know, I don't want to see them up there with Rex and Phil and doing that. You know, did they know him and were part of that family? Like, you know, Dime was wearing the Black Label shit all over the place. I don't know how good of friends they were. It's not up to me to know that, you know, as long as they're just paying tribute.
Yeah, absolutely. And Charlie is just killing on the drums as well. I mean, he studied Vinny. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, Charlie's awesome. He can play anything.
So do you have, I love hearing Dimebag and Vinny stories. Do you have a good like story where you're just, you know, hanging out with them or on the road with them?
I met Daryl back in 88, 89, I want to say in 89 at the Foundations Forum. It was like a convention in LA for, you know, rock and metal and music thing, and you know, as bands played, and it was just like this huge party, and met Daryl, and it was right when Cowboys came out, and I wasn't a big Cowboys fan, but I was a Daryl fan because Violence had played through Dallas in 88, and I saw like the Shrine at this one theater that they played, or that they had in Dallas. I forget the name of it, but we had played there with Testament, Nuclear Assault, and Overkill. And I was big, you know, I was San Francisco elitist thrash kid, you know, and so I see pictures of them. I love my hair metal, you know, and I love music. I see them, you know, who's this Pantera band? You know, I heard, and then I see, you know, them, and they were done up with the hair and the spandex and the whole deal. And, you know, and I wore spandex back in the day too. I got nothing against that. You know, Exodus did, Metallica did. Everybody wore spandex, you know. But I remember them being kind of the Van Halen, not really glammy, but, you know, that type of band. And then when Cowboys came out, everybody was, you know, and rightfully so, but kind of were like, fuck, this is, you know, this is awesome. And they're heavy and blah, blah, blah. And I'm, you know, Bay Area thrash elite mind, you know, all of 20 years old or whatever. I was like, no, I remember you guys from Dallas, you know. You know, I was like, you don't just get to decide to be thrash and like have this, you know. I was pretty, you know, it took me a minute with that. I like certain songs on there, and you know, Daryl was awesome, and you know, of course the musicianship was off the charts, but it was when Vulgar came out when I was like, oh fuck, you know, this is fucking, and Vulgar is one of my top five records of all time. You know, it's just, fuck yeah. I'd listen to that back to front. You know, that's when I was in, that's when I was all in with, you know, with that band. And So we're playing Download. I just joined Machine Head. It was my first time overseas doing the festivals as a member. And Damage Plan rolls up, and they had been driving all night. Slayer was supposed to be playing the main stage, and Damage Plan was playing the second stage. And we were on the main stage, like a couple down from Slayer, right before Slayer. And so Slayer can't make it. They're stuck at the border. And so Damage rolls up, and they're all, you know, hey, Damage Plan, you're going to be on the main, you know, fucking, they're all hammered, you know, just like been up all night drinking. And Dime was like warming up on Rob's guitar. He gave me a guitar to just kind of warm up. And he called me Fanugi, like, you know, for fucking new guy. Cause he's all, Phil, man, you know, you brought the shred to Machine Head, man. I love your playing, bro. It was awesome. You know? So he gave me high marks for the Ashes record that had just come out. And,
that's and so cool.
It was like later, you know, just months later that he was taken from us. But, you know, so I had that really glowing Dime moment. We did a tour with Hell Yeah in January of 2008. And it was right after my father died. So we were playing, you know, five songs a night, and I was done. And Hell Yeah brought in, they had a bunch of girls at their shows, you know, that was like single guy. And like, so we would play, I would get a couple, you know, double Captain and Coke and just be, you know, on the lookout and doing the single guy thing. So that tour was a lot of numbing down, a lot of grieving for me, you know, and just not feeling what I did. And Vin was really good in talking to me about kind of being processed. And he kind of went through, you know, things are entirely different. But we were in Atlantic City the night before the Super Bowl, and it was the one where the Patriots were undefeated, you know, and they're going to play the Giants, you know, and everybody thinks, you know, they're going to wipe out the floor with the Giants. Me and Vinny and Greg from Hell Yeah were walking through, we're playing, and my dad's lucky number was 33.
Oh, look at
that. So we were walking by a roulette table, and hey, Vin, I'm going to put 20 on 33 for my pops. And fucking, he's like, do it, bro. And I put it down, and it fucking hits. And it's like, fucking, oh, shit. You know, it was a magical moment that me and Vin had. And it was cool to, you know, he was good to me on that tour. And he kind of understood a little bit what I was going through. So, you know, God bless you, Dime and Vin. And thank you for all that you've done for us, man. And yeah, there you go. Yeah. Diamond stories.
Thank you for sharing that. Well, I can't wait for this Kerry King album to drop. I'm looking forward to it. You got some like music videos? Are you guys gonna, you know, release some merch and?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm in the need to know department, and I think that there's talk about filming a couple videos coming up or not. I don't, you know. I think that. The release is in May. We've got those two shows right before the release. We've got the European festivals. We've got the Lamb of God Mastodon, a Malevolence opening, you know, States tour. So it's all exciting. I have another record that I'm, I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about that yet. Maybe I shouldn't talk about that yet. I probably shouldn't talk about that. Sorry, Larry.
Well, can you talk about this violence? You just went to with South America, right? Am I right? Yeah. How'd that go? Like, how many shows did you guys play?
Oh man. We did 10 shows. We did 10 shows. South American travel. I mean, we didn't have a day off, so we're flying every day. So we're up at 4 or 5 in the morning to fly early, to get to a spot and sleep another couple hours before we do the show. So we were sleeping in 3 or 4 hour pockets throughout the day. And the shows were amazing. The fans were awesome. So it was my swan songs with the band. I played my last show with Violence. Not going to say it's not my farewell show. Right. It was a farewell show. But, you know, for the time being, I don't even know what to say. It's just like, yeah, I am not, there are zero plans for me to play with that band live anymore.
Wow. Yeah, man, that's decades of you playing with them off and on, right?
Yep. Yeah, almost 40 years. Almost 40 years. We did a lot of cool things. The last EP I was super proud of. Played some cool places. And it's just time to... The past year, we were kind of fuck buddies, you know? We just kind of like... I'd call if they had something cool lined up. And it was like... Lamb of God boat or, you know, something convenient for me. And it was selfish of me to kind of cherry pick that type of stuff. And I just didn't want to be in that. It just needed to cut it off. Needed to cut it off. We're not banging each other anymore.
And you know, the friends with benefits anymore.
Well, we're not. Sorry.
Well, man, Phil, I appreciate you being on the show again. This is a great update, and I was so happy to find out about this Kerry King project. And, yeah. And even though I'm friends with Kyle, I had no idea, and it just kind of I found out when everyone else found out.
Yeah, lots of surprises.
Yes. But, man, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys live. Hopefully more shows will happen in Atlanta, Georgia, so I can, go.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll catch you down the road somewhere.
Yeah, man. Is there anything else going on?
Yeah, there is, but I can't talk about it.
I know, right? Well, that means I got to interview you again, dude.
So soon. Yes, we'll talk about that when it happens. There's rumblings around about this something else that's happening. So that's exciting. Probably here in a couple months, it'll pop off and we'll be good.
Last thing I want to say is I was watching Violence, and you guys did a cover of the Dead Kennedy song, California. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alice. Man, that's such a great song. I grew up listening to that song. Right. How'd you guys pick awesome. That song to cover?
I think it was a song that we played live. I think that Dean original. No, I think maybe Sean. Shit, I don't know, Scott. We had played it live at one of the reunion shows when we first got back together. And we were we're still pretty much in quarantine at that point. And we were just kind of, because the bar was closed. We shot the video at the bar. And the bar was closed.
Cool.
And so we did our own take on it. Everybody says it's like anti- Vax video, but it's not, it's just at the man itself, it's if you know the lyrics to the song, then you understand what it's about. And it was just a cover tune that we liked. I didn't want to, at that point, I wasn't committed to writing new music, and I didn't want to struggle through coming up with a song to release first. So we just put out this silly cover and to have it, hey, we're back as a band and this is what we're doing, type deal. So
yeah. Well, it's excellent, man. I loved it. It was a happy surprise. I saw. I was like, "Oh, this is amazing!" I encourage everybody to look it up. It's so cool.
Right on.
All right, man. Phil, I appreciate being on the show. Thank you for updating us on the Kerry King thing that you're doing, which is amazing.
Right on.
You got to wake up feeling happy about that. I mean, that's the band you grew up listening to in the Bay Area. That's awesome, man.
It is. It's exciting to have it finally, be out in the open, and we're all just so ready to get out and start playing and jamming together and, becoming what, this is going to be. So I think it's going to be really good. I love the record. I love what I did on the record. I love what Mark did on the record. I love what Kerry, these are some of my favorite Kerry King solos on this. Like hearing some of his leads, it's like, I think, how do I put this? I think that Kerry will admit that he's not the most, known for his solo stylings. I think that he has a style, and I think that these are like some of his well put together and performed leads that I've heard him do. And I asked him, I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "I had time to work on my solos." he's usually in the studio working on lyrics and doing blah blah blah, but we've had so much time to put stuff together that, you know, he's had time to work because he puts the least amount of effort into his solo. So it's like, man, it shows. It's, you know, the dude's a monster guitar player. You know, his rhythms are, right hand's really fucking good. And, you know, so it's, you listen to that. That's why, you know, it's not the only reason why, but you listen to the rhythms on the record and, you know, and probably the last bunch of Slayer records, they're fucking tight as fuck. He's really good. Nope. Really good, Scott. We look forward to you, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Phil Dimmel, man. I appreciate it a lot, brother.
No worries. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, man.